Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today we talk about Sydney v West Coast and that rivalry. What does it mean? Was Freo that good or was Carlton just that bad? And what is going on in Adelaide?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. Tuesday morning. This means it's time for the first edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. Glenn Quartermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times, sitting just across from me in the studio. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer of the West Australian newspaper. We are brought to you today by Tab Touch. Quarters, interesting round of fixtures. How'd your tipping go, mate?
Oh, clean sweep for me, mate. I did everything, clean sheet, everything. Tipped a lot, which is good.
Yeah, me too.
I think there were a couple of games that could have gone one way or the other, but, well, St Kilda Gold Coast, I guess we were very lucky there. Amazing game, that one. But, yeah, looked pretty happy to get the lot, so... Yourself?
I think I was the same.
Yeah, yes, beautiful.
I always have trouble remembering who I tipped, but I'm pretty sure I got them all.
Well, actually, I was fearful because for some reason I thought I'd tip Carlton, and I was halfway through the game and I thought, hang on, did I tip him? And I looked in the paper and I hadn't, so that's good. I think I changed my tip at the last moment, so a bit lucky that one.
The universe intervened on your behalf.
Oh, yeah, and it intervened with Carlton too.
One goal makes a big difference, doesn't it? So St Kilda doesn't kick that last goal. Everyone's calling for... Alan Richardson's head. They do kick the last goal. Brilliant snap by Gresham.
Yeah.
And everything's okay for now.
Well, I don't think everything's okay for now. But well, actually, as I said, I didn't expect him to be punted. I'm just not sure they're in a position where they can do that. But look,
no, I'm talking about the noise, though, as the coaches were
calling. Of course. Yeah, look, it was two things, I suppose. One is... Gold Coast, I just can't... We've talked about the fitness levels or otherwise, but two behinds in the last four final quarters in total.
That's remarkable.
It is remarkable, isn't it? And we got to three-quarter time on Saturday night and I turned to my colleague at the Sunday Times and I said, they can win this St Kilda. No, they can't. I said, yes, they can, mate. I said, have a look at Gold Coast form in last quarters. And we just sat back and watched it unfold. It was a train wreck on their behalf. Great for St Kilda to get something, because it's been a long, long period for them, particularly how it unfolded at the end. And thankfully they had a win, because not a lot happening underneath. Did you see the St Kilda reserves at the weekend, or Sandringham?
So they were the goalless.
They were the goalless team. It was wet, but I'll tell you what, goalless footy for a VFL team, that's not good.
They have a pretty serious injury list, though, don't they?
There are about seven AFL-listed players in that team.
Yeah.
So that's not good enough.
Yeah. No, I think the Saints are suffering through injury. Now, there are now concerns that Dylan Robin won't play again.
I did see that, yes. Let's hope that's not the case, but let's hope that let's put his health first. That's the most important thing. He's got a whole long life ahead of him, so footy's secondary to that. We'd love to see him back. He was playing some pretty good footy too before his health.
So he's a handy player, isn't he? He can play short or tall. He's got a massive tank. He was one of the best long runners at Fremantle when he was at the club. And he's a good ball user. So he's a significant out.
He is a significant out. And, of course, for anyone who hasn't followed it, we're talking about a heart issue for Dylan. So he's had some minor surgery and some treatment, but it hasn't gone as hoped at this point.
So in terms of footy and stability in the industry, Quarters, I put it to you that the result on the Gold Coast, while it will feel like a disaster for the Suns, is not that big a disaster for football. St Kilda got the win that they absolutely had to have, and I thought for three quarters
the Suns
played the sort of footy we think they should play more often.
Well, they were playing it earlier in the year too, Duff. Mm. I mean, they were playing good footy, but that just seems there's been a tipping point for them, and I feel a bit for Stewie Dew in this first year, you know, as coach of that team. I hope they give him a long-term tenure. I'm sure they will, but yeah, they were pretty good for three quarters. They'd be pretty devastated, though.
So how much is this down to the youth in the midfield? See, people are talking about whether Tom Lynch goes or not, is that this is the catastrophe that's going to happen. It may be that the catastrophe's already happened. They've lost an A-grade midfield. They're playing a lot of kids through that midfield, and it may just be that maybe they stuffed up their pre-season strength and conditioning, or maybe they're just too young, and young players run out of puff.
Well, two things. One, yeah, the catastrophe has happened, because if you look at a team of ex-Gold Coast players floating around in the AFL, it's not a bad team.
Yep.
The other thing is, yeah, youth in the midfield, you've probably got a point, because if you looked at the stoppage structure in that final quarter...
What structure?
Yeah, exactly. So there were a lot of St Kilda players...
It was the wigwam structure.
Yeah, they were able to do what they as they pleased, including at that final stoppage, which St Kilda kicked a goal from. So I think that as much as Stewie G can instruct them, fatigue kicks in the last quarter and they just can't adhere to it.
I think Aaron Young will have nightmares about the last one.
You know, well, he should.
He was with Gresham.
He only needs to be in his face at that stoppage and it doesn't happen. So, and he should have nightmares about it.
Yeah. Let's go to the two games involving the local teams. West Coast versus Sydney. It means that Sydney have now played West Coast twice and beat them. They are the only team to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're a great fan of the Swans. You
I
have
am.
Them in your premiership reckoning.
I do.
What does it mean to you for the ultimate outcome this season?
Oh, look, there's two games that they've won against the Eagles. So, but I think they're gettable. Look, I think from the Eagles' point of view, to hold them goalless in the first and last quarters is significant. Mm. Yep. To win inside 50s, to win clearances is significant for the Eagles. Both sides were inaccurate. The Eagles missed some easy shots, but so did Buddy. So, you know, you can't use that as an excuse. I think at the MCG it might be a different story.
Yeah, so, I would think the MCG would play more into West Coast hands.
Yeah.
As poor as West Coast have been at the MCG, I'm not sure that Sydney are a great MCG team either.
They've had a fair bit of experience on it.
Yeah.
I still have Sydney in my reckoning. It was not a disaster by any means for West Coast. So I think should have walked away from that game feeling pretty good about themselves, I would have thought.
So what it told me is that in order to win it, they need Darling and Kennedy both up and going. And what it reeked of a little bit on Friday night was the old Eagles going to Josh Kennedy too often and the opposition team getting bodies in front of him and intercepting.
And I guess a small forward line that was a little bit underdone.
And inexperienced.
Yeah. So, and it's a big call going up to the SCG against that side, albeit it's not the Sydney. I mean, it is a relatively young Sydney side too, with a hell of a lot of talent coming up through the ranks at Sydney.
So a strange thing to point out, given that Sydney won and now 2-0 against West Coast, but two guys for Sydney, I reckon, will become an issue for them as the season goes on. I reckon Hanbury and Jack are nearly gone.
Have been for some time.
So Hanbury did a run with job on Gaff, did a reasonable job, although Gaff worked his way into the game after half time. He's lost all the power out of his legs. I don't know whether there's an injury.
How old is Hanbury?
He's not that old.
Mm.
He would be
27?
Late 20s, yeah. Yeah, mid to late. So that's a concern for them. He's been a bit like that for a year and a half.
I don't know if it's a major concern for me, because both of those players, I don't think either of those players have been a significant factor for Sydney for some time.
But you pull them out
mm-hmm.
and two young players come in and have to play primary mid roles.
Yep.
Like at the moment, Ollie Florent floats around on the wings.
Terrific player.
Yeah, he's a very good young player. Paul Roos's tip for the Rising Star.
Surprising.
In June.
Mm-hmm. Surprising. Sydney boy. But you've got, there's a lot of bottom end, youthful talent there. Heaney. It's a real pity Callum Mills is out for the year.
Yeah, I have Sydney a little bit off my three. I agree with Mick Mulhouse. My three are Richmond, West Coast and Collingwood.
Yep.
I think Mick, in your column in the Sunday Times,
mm-hmm, yeah.
I think he nailed it. I've got Sydney a little bit off them, and I've got Geelong a little bit off them. But what I would say about Geelong is if Geelong get their full deck in and going, they may have some upside there. I'm not sure that Sydney has the same upside.
Yeah, Geelong worry me a little bit in that the defence has surprised me this year. Big tick for the defence. Obviously, the midfield is a great midfield. I worry about their forward line. I'd like to see Menzel back in there, but I do worry about their forward line. And what worried me against Richmond, yes, it was a gallant effort. Yes, they ran Richmond pretty close. But if you look at the It seems that there's four or five Geelong, and then there's a bit of daylight between their next best player. Whereas Richmond, it's a much more complete performance, and I think there's a lot more upside for Richmond. Yep. I don't know if they're playing that well at the moment, but they're getting it done.
Yep.
And I think that was as good as Geelong could stretch Richmond. So I think there's a lot more upside for me to Richmond than there is Geelong.
I'd want to see him play on a dry day on a firmer deck before I made too many judgments. I thought Richmond were fantastic. I thought it was a fantastic game given the conditions. But let me see that game on a dry day, somewhere mid to late September, and then you could make
15 in a row at the G now.
So yeah, I know. Yeah, just. Their incredible. Home ground, it's the home of the grand final. You know my thoughts on that.
I do. Incredible.
The other significant out, obviously, for West Coast at the weekend was Tom Barras.
Yes.
Or Tommy Barras. And he's a significant out as well because it meant that Jeremy McGovern had to play deep inside D50 on Lance Franklin.
And went okay.
He went okay on Lance. Yeah. Lance, mind you, as Adam Simpson pointed out after when I said he didn't have a big influence on the game, he said, well, he had 18 possessions and had 7 shots on goal.
Yeah. What was going on with McGovern is, what was it, a 6 minute? He couldn't get back on the ground or was being rested or managed?
And they got mismatches in two big marking contests. And I know there's some debate over the free kicks, but the Brad Shepherd one was a holding free. And the other one, while people are accusing Buddy of diving, I think he just went to jump at the time Hearn went to shift him. And because, of course, once your feet are no longer on the ground and someone applies a bit of pressure, you move a long way. And I think that's what's happened. He didn't do the Superman forward flop like Alex Rance. He just was shifted.
Well, you better
a long
be
way.
Careful, Duff. Damien Hardwick might be listening.
Yes, I know. Well, we'd like to think Damien Hardwick's listening.
Well, he might be getting some insights.
We may be a little bit optimistic there. So, I didn't think there was any great impact on West Coast flag chances for
me. Not at all. Not at all.
But a good win by Sydney. And if Sydney run into West Coast in September, regardless of where it is, they will feel they have a chance.
Of course.
Because they've beaten them here and they've beaten them over there. Fremantle, Carlton.
Well,
love Fremantle's first half, and I think the absolute opposite applies to Carlton.
Well, it was the worst half of footy I've seen. I can remember. I can't recall a worst half of footy. Now, I'm not going to take too much away from Freo. Freo capitalised on that. They were really good, Freo.
Yeah.
But that was the worst half from a team I've seen. I can't recall a worst half of footy. So it was a shocker. Redeemed themselves in the second half, Carlton. And I've been patient with them and I'll continue to be patient with Carlton because this is what they have to do. But that was dreadful.
So you know what's happened here, Quarters? My theory on this, and I think Ross Lyon's rhetoric backs this up. Ross Lyon always says you can bring young players in and you can play them and they can play well if you have good leaders who lead well.
Mm.
If you look at who Fremantle's leaders are, Nathan Fyfe was the favourite for the Brownlow medal before he got suspended. Lachie Neal, probably, he's borderline All-Australian, probably should be well and truly in the conversation for All-Australian. David Mundy, former club champion, former All-Australian. Aaron Sandilands, former club champion, former All-Australian. Carlton has Paddy Cripps and Cade Simpson leading there. So they both have the young...
And Paddy Cripps, yeah.
They both have the same number of young players, but one team has that four or five more senior players who play well and lead well, and Carlton just doesn't have them. So they're basically a bunch of kids being led by an absolute veteran and a guy who, as great a player as he is, he's still really very much a young player.
And the experience Carlton has got in there, really not the A-grade talent or leaders as such. I mean, Daisy Thomas springs to mind. I guess my argument would be, what's he doing there?
Yeah.
And there's a bit of that about Carlton.
Well, he's not a leader, is he?
No, he's not.
Good player, yeah, Daisy. He's been a good player, but he's not a leader.
Yeah.
Levi Casbolt, not a leader. Sam Rowe, wholehearted competitor, not a good enough player.
He dropped a shocker in the first half,
and he had a really bad moment.
Yeah, that was shocking. That was shocking. I don't know. You'd need to be patient to be a Blues supporter at the moment.
So and they've been patient. So that's going to be really stretched. The reaction at halftime when they were 77-7 down from their fans was not good. The chorus of boos around the ground.
You know what? But Duff, you can't blame them. As you said, they've been patient for a long time. Yep. They pay good money to be members and to support their team, and they've got to know. I mean, you can't expect anything less than that with that sort of performance that they put up. You talk about the leadership at Freo, and with eight players with fewer than 25 games experience, Freo, that's what it does, leadership, because it lets your young players come through and shine.
Yep.
When you do have that leadership.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, interesting thing, a tweet we've got from James Banyard. He said, Freo has four players in the top 12 for Rising Star betting, yet only one has been nominated for the Rising Star. Mm. Andy Brayshaw was robbed. So, obviously, Hunter Clark from St Kilda gets the nomination from the weekend. Played pretty strongly in their win over Gold Coast. That was probably Andy Brayshaw's best game for Fremantle in what has been a pretty solid season. So I think,
So Brayshaw and Chera.
Probably. I'm a bit surprised. Well, I'm surprised that Chera didn't get the nomination
last week
for the game against
Adelaide. And Brayshaw hasn't done. Yeah, I'd be very surprised if both of them aren't nominated by the end of the year. They have to be. They should be. I couldn't imagine the Rising Star presentation evening happening without those two among the nominations. It just wouldn't be right.
Yeah,
given the seasons they've had.
I agree with that. But they're
playing in Melbourne, they would have been nominated by now.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Mm.
That old chestnut.
Well, even I'm conceding that one, Duff.
And Chera, another solid game. What you've got to love about Freo is that they're getting input from younger players. So Brandon Cox didn't kick four goals, didn't dominate the game like he did against Adelaide, but he took three good contested marks early. Michael Apness continues to take the odd contested mark.
Yeah, he's coming along.
Even
giving Niehaus a run off half back. I mean, you've got that defence that was a new. It's a new look defence down there.
Yeah.
It's coming together okay.
Stephen Gyro
was good.
Breaks a GPS record every time
Love that left foot. Love it. Yeah.
Doesn't always run to the right spots, but
15 plus Ks I think at the weekend.
Yeah, they reckon he's a big runner. So, thanks for your tweet, James. And so for Freo, psychologically, just great to get a win on the road.
Absolutely. Yeah, they needed that.
I did like Connor Blakely's bravado when he talked about, they can gate crash the eight. I don't think they can because they'd have to win.
We know mathematically they can, and he has to think along those lines.
Absolutely.
And good on him for doing so. It's mathematically possible. I think there's a couple of clubs ahead of them who can gate crash it.
Yep.
One of them might be my boys with the draw that the Hawks have got.
Yes, I'll tell you who's a good player for your boys, and he's a bloke that we've given a clip
Sicily.
A couple of times. James Sicily.
Yeah, he's a ripper. Well, he'd be, I mean, you look at your All-Australian back line, he'd have to be in there by now. What a beautiful position kick he is. Beautiful kick of the footy.
Those three goals, all from outside 50.
Yeah, and he's playing off half-back.
And the third one was a 7-iron.
Yeah.
He's just done a little round-the-corner chip, and it's gone through half goalpost height. He's a super player. He's a great mark. He spoils when he has to spoil.
I think the good thing about he does, and I think what was complimented his game at the weekend was he was defensively very good as well.
Yep.
So a big tick for Sicily. There's a few others there who are running into some form too. We should acknowledge Burgon's 350th. Didn't have a great influence in the game, but isn't it great when you see these milestones and you see the family involved and the kids in the circle after the game? I love that stuff.
Yeah, really good. He's been, I think we discussed where he sits in amongst Indigenous players and all players for that matter. I mean, he's right up there with the greats now.
So we've got to acknowledge Adelaide. This is now, injury has created this crisis in my opinion, but it was really interesting to see the chairman finally come out and acknowledge that the pre-season camp or apologise with an exclamation mark next to it about their pre-season camp. They got it wrong. And it seems the Eddie Betts stuff is coming to the surface now too.
So what was the group they had come in? Collective Minds, was it?
Collective Minds.
Jeez, it's not a great advertisement for them, is it, really?
Yeah, no, it's not. And it's interesting, Eddie on Adelaide Radio saying, I'm okay with it now.
Now.
Clearly he's been through a process where he wasn't okay with it.
Yeah.
And I think it struck with their Indigenous roots. They were unhappy with that.
Yep.
And there were other the crazy stuff happening. I think there was a leadership group and a non-leadership group, and I think the leadership group was being made to feel like they were being pursued by someone through this jungle wherever they were. So it's all pretty crazy stuff.
One lot of them was subjected to the Richmond
Yeah, they were. Blindfolded song. And listened repeatedly to
over
the Richmond
and over
theme
and
song.
Over
yeah.
again.
you know, as I've said before.
I have no idea what that achieves.
No, I can't see how that would upset you too much, but I just sing along with it. And so it's a good, I actually like this song. But I think Adelaide, you know, four in a row, they've got their problems. They really do.
So they've got some early draft pick quarters, and they can get some more the way they're going. And there's talk that Mitch McGovern may be keen to
leave.
Explore a move.
Now, Mitch is a really interesting one because he re-signed because he was led to believe there was no more room in the salary cap, and then along comes Bryce Gibbs.
And there was room in the salary cap.
And there was room in the salary cap. So when you're Adelaide, you can't – those Ducks and Drakes, in this era, you can't get away with that. Just be up front with your players.
So the series of events we're talking about, that tells me there's a problem at the top, and I'm not talking – Don Pike top.
No.
I'm talking about above and beyond Don Pike. Adelaide should be looking very closely at the club leaders as opposed to the footy department leaders, because there's been a lot of things that a CEO should have stopped, I think.
Yep.
Certainly when Collective Minds told them what they had outlined for the players in the pre-season camp, I think I would have been a little bit concerned about that.
Yeah, but they let that go ahead. I think Don Pike has been at pains to say, you know, we got that wrong and we won't be doing that again.
So can they make the eight?
Mathematically, of course they can. But I just don't think with their outs that it's going to happen for Adelaide. And as I've said before, probably time to park the bus, give a few blokes a rest who are a bit weary, probably the likes of Taylor Walker, who just hasn't looked right this year. Give them a rest, restock, look at next year. I think it's time to look at that.
So what happens if they come out next time out and they beat West Coast, tip the flag favourites on their backside?
Well, I would say, where's it been for 4 or 5 weeks?
Well, certainly wasn't there in the second half against Hawthorn.
Well, in the third quarter, I'd say, was the... They weren't that bad in the fourth, but I think the third quarter was diabolically bad. And as good as Hawthorn was, they're pretty much allowed to do as they please. There was no pressure at all.
Yep.
And that sort of effort worries me. About the psyche of the club and the players, that worries me, that sort of effort.
Here's a good tweet for your quarters, and this is one that comes back to where the grand final is played. In any other competition, this wouldn't be allowed. 2018 wins outside home state, 0% Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone 100% Eagles. Of course, that's no longer true because they lost at the SCG on Friday night. 2018 wins in home state, 100% Tigers, 86% Eagles. 2018 games outside home state, 5 for the Tigers, 10 for the Eagles. Grand final contract, 2018 to 2057 in Victoria. I think he's making a point there.
Yeah, look,
Heinrich Wilhelm.
Well, we can debate where the grand final should be. I think the answer to this is I think it's clear that the Eagles and Dockers and other teams, they need to get more games on the MCG. That's, I think, that's at least a short-term solution, or short-term aid at least.
What do you make of, so that game on Sunday, and it was an absolutely fantastic game, that was Geelong's home game. Played at the MCG, where Richmond has won their last 50.
So what was it, 50, 46?
46,000.
Yeah, it was a pretty wet day.
Yep.
What's Geelong hold?
Geelong holds about 35 at the moment. See, we'll eventually be 40.
My view on that is, I think Geelong's, MCG is like a second home to Geelong too. They've played a lot of footy there because they have their blockbusters there. I don't mind it. I'd hate to see a Geelong-Richmond game where 40,000, and in this case, it was only 46 there, where you got 30,000, 40,000, as was the case in last year's final series, where they'd miss out.
So Geelong's argument is they're happy to play home and away, some home and away blockbusters at the MCG, because they have for some time. They traditionally play Hawthorn at the MCG. I think they maybe Collingwood too. I think it's a home game. They switch to the MCG. Their argument is if they earn a home final, it should be played at Cardinia Park.
Of course they do.
So
they're near unbeatable there.
Your thoughts?
Well, they're near unbeatable there. Of course they're going to say that. My thoughts are...
But don't the good teams play well against them?
I think it's a home final. It's in Victoria. It should be in Victoria. I think you should have as many people go to that game as possible. My argument is that it should be at the G.
So why not just let them have their 11 home and away games at Cardinia Park?
That's a very good point. Again, there may be occasions where 20, 30 miss out because they're at GMHBA or Cadinia Park and not in Melbourne. I like to see as many players, as many fans able to go to the game as possible.
And they do have an interesting membership, Geelong, don't they? They have their Geelong membership and they have their Melbourne membership. They're almost two. Brian Cook has tried to explain this to me before, and I certainly haven't fully grasped what it's all about. But they do have a significant chunk of members who are based in Melbourne and they like to service them.
I think if we're talking, I mean, it's inequitable anyway. There are so many areas of the AFL draw and the AFL competition that aren't fair. So I just think this is one. It's not fair that they don't get to play their home games, home finals, all of their home finals in Geelong. But again, I think that it's just one area, and I think you should get as many there as you can. I'd be interested to know how many Melbourne members Geelong has.
Well, it's in the thousands, yeah. I think, and I know that when Fremantle got sent to Geelong to play that final in 2013, of course,
and
when
won.
They famously won.
Mm-hmm.
I rang Cookie to ask him about it and what the justification for it was. And I believe the clear justification for it was that they were trying to get money to build the grandstand, and they had to show to the state and federal governments that someone was prepared to play big games there occasionally. So,
but I think for Geelong Freo, and it's unfair on Freo, but because they'd probably be a bit, well, obviously, you'd be a better chance in Melbourne, but
well, actually,
you're going to get the crowd.
Because of the way Freo played at that time with the press,
yeah,
were actually a better chance in Geelong. That was the interesting thing. Well, we all looked at it and we said, you know, how dare they make Fremantle the first club that's ever had to go to Geelong to play a final. The reality is style of play meant that it actually worked in Freo's favour, and they choked them and stopped their ball movement and won the game.
Mm.
Of course, the famous Aaron Sandilands tap, Stephen Hill interchange.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, yes. Be in your top three or four Fremantle wins, I'd say, in the history.
Oh, I think that one's at the top.
Yeah.
Any away final win is a significant event in a club's history, I think.
We should go back to Thursday night too, not forgetting it seems like an eternity ago, but Port Adelaide are now just completely emaciated Western Bulldogs. Eastern Woods out for the year now, so it's just gone from bad to worse for them. 10-goal win to Port. Just running into some really nice form. I think Wingard going into the midfield, Robbie Gray being allowed to settle in the forward line. He's blossoming again. Not that he really ever had a lean patch, but Robbie Gray starting to play some really good footy again. How does he rank? If you're talking about your Dangerfields, your Martins.
Robbie Gray?
Yeah, I think we've got to sort of start now thinking of him in the same breath.
Well, Ken Hinckley talks him up and puts him in that bracket. I reckon Robbie Gray's a stunning player, and his ball handling is the equal, well, maybe Cyril Rioli is as good a ball handler as Robbie Gray.
Well, Hinckley, who's worked with Ablett, obviously,
yeah,
Gary Ablett Jr., says he's equal.
Yeah, well, I think he'd be an equally good ball handler. I think that when Robbie goes into the middle, he doesn't always run as well as the great midfield runners. And midfielders are such a package deal, aren't they? You know, they've got to be able to run. They've got to be able to win the contested ball. I like Port better when Travis Boak is predominantly midfield and Robbie Gray is predominantly forward, because he's just so dangerous.
But I think with Robbie Gray, I guess in many ways his ability to kick a bag of goals every week probably is in a way.
Yep.
He's not going to play midfield as much, is he? So he's never really going to be able to be that great midfielder.
And they're not always surgical with their ball movement, Port. And so often when they have bad games, there's a disconnect between their midfield and their forward line. I reckon Robbie Gray gives them that touch of X-Factor magic, turn a half chance into a goal that they need to beat top teams when their midfielders are.
I'm fascinated about Friday night, Port playing Melbourne in Adelaide. So we'll get onto that on Thursday, but it's going to tell us a lot about both teams.
Yep.
Melbourne being unable to, so far, show us anything against a quality opponent, and Port needing to maybe put them away.
So we'll talk about them on Thursday, obviously, when we do our tips. We'll also talk about West Coast's big game against Essendon at Optus Stadium on Thursday night. If you're going to the game, people, early reminder, go early, go on the train. The bridge isn't built.
I tell you what, though, it's not far off. I drive past it every morning because my kids go to Trinity College, and it's pretty close, and it looks pretty spectacular.
Yeah, that'll be good when they get it done. It should be good because it's taken them long enough to do it.
Yeah.
But if you're going to the game, go early, go on the train, because it could get pretty busy and messy in the lead up to.
Go and have a beer at the Royal, walk across the Windan, whatever. Get there early, go to the Canfield, whatever.
Absolutely.
Just go and have a couple of quieties beforehand.
Go to the casino.
Exactly. Just cruise. Have a cruisy day and just.
Wander down.
Yeah.
Do all of that. And you mentioned Port and Melbourne on Friday night. One more before we go quarters.
Yep.
One move I loved about Fremantle in the game against Carlton. Nathan Fyfe back in the team. Connor Blakely stayed in and around the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have a real punch and a real strong contested ball.
He's been a very consistent player now for a couple of years, hasn't he?
Mm.
A lot to like about him. Yeah, and yes, there are green shirts everywhere for Freo. There'll be some disappointments
Absolutely.
In the second half of the year, yep. So don't people don't write them off when that happens. That's just a part of the journey. But a lot of really nice green shoots.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, well, that's the first wrap for Duff and Quarters this week. We'll be back with all the tips from for the next round, of course, on Thursday. And, of course, that starts with Thursday night footy at Optus Stadium, West Coast v Essendon. And then we head into the weekend. Of course, Fremantle, you have the bye this weekend. So take the weekend off. Go to the pub.
Exactly.
Watch soccer if you like.
Mow the lawn or do whatever you have to do at home.
Ring the USGA and ask them what the hell were they thinking when they set up Shinnecock Hills for the US Open Golf.
Well, it's pin placement stuff.
Yes,
it's
pin
all about pin placements and
exactly.
Phil Mickelson. My goodness.
All right, we'll be back on Thursday. We'll talk to you then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch.